Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Star Tours turns 35, another good sign that trams are returning soon. New Lunar New Year mural in downtown Disney.
A new treat comes to DCA. Looking forward to the next 100 years of the Disney Company. We go in depth with Star Tours and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Howdy, partners. For your safety, remain seated with your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast. And be sure to watch your ears. If any of you folks are wearing hats or glasses, best remove them, because Tag and Teresa have the wildest ride in the wilderness.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of January 12th, 2022. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Tag Bushman. It's official weekly tiers like Christy J and Kristen M, who both increase their support, who ensure the DL Weekly can happen every week. We have an amazing community of Disneyland fans that are ready to meet you, hear your experiences, share your knowledge, and share all they have to offer with you. Head on over to dlweekly.net/support to join the community.
It's that time again for our friend Eric over at Concierge to catch us up on other Disney news.
Hello, everyone. This is Eric Johnson with Concierge, and welcome to the D180. While Teg and Teresa cover all things Disneyland, in the D180 we take a spin around the rest of the Disney universe, and we do it in 180 seconds. Let's jump right in. We start our journey outside Paris, France, where Disneyland Paris unveiled a huge portion of its 30th anniversary celebration. After 12 months of refurbishments, the scrims around Sleeping Beauty Castle finally came down, revealing a revitalized look. This is the castle's first major refurbishment since it opened in 1992. Disney worked with French artisans skilled in restoring historical sites. Paris's castle is a gorgeous example of Disney paying tribute to castles, churches, and tapestries around France. Let's head a little further east and board a cruise ship. Adventures by Disney's Danube and Rhine River cruises departing this summer are discounted a rare $500 per guest. Travel through the Black Forest and French wine country. Visit German castles and the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam. It's a week of hiking, sightseeing, eating, drinking, and relaxing among Europe's natural and historic beauty. Departures are set June 26th through August 4th, and rooms are limited, so give your concierge crew a call now. We'll head further east to Hong Kong Disneyland, which sadly, as of January 7th, is closed through January 20th. This is the fourth COVID-related closure for the park. When it reopens, guests will see lanterns aplenty along with beautiful golden red ornaments, gongs, and drums. It's the Lunar New Year, celebrated by 20% of the world's population. This is the year of the tiger, so you can be sure we'll see plenty of Tigger at the parks. Travel more northeast and we arrive at Shanghai Disneyland, where you can also experience the Lunar New Year. We don't have a lot of details on the plans yet, but it is part of Shanghai's fifth birthday celebration. Shanghai tends to pull out all the stops with lanterns, drums, decorations, and plenty of festive treats. As we head over the Pacific, wave hello to the guests at Disney's Aulani on Oahu. Guests arriving from April 16th through June 5th can expect 15% off a four-night stay or 20% off of a five-night or more stay. They will also receive $150 in resort cash. The Disneyland Resort also loves to celebrate the Lunar New Year over at DCA. This year, try plenty of Asian food and drinks around Paradise Bay, along with live performances and activities designed to teach kids about the holidays. For the first time this year, visit with Raya, fresh from her debut in Raya and the Last Dragon. We round out our tour at Walt Disney World. Epcot is in the middle of its International Festival of the Arts, but that doesn't mean you can't celebrate the Lunar New Year there as well. Spend some time in the China Pavilion at the World Showcase. The House of Good Fortune shop stocks a wide variety of Chinese items, snacks, and art sure to please visitors with any budget. When you're done there, step inside the recreation of Beijing's Temple of Heaven. Inside, visit the displays of Chinese antiques while you wait to see the Circle Vision movie, Reflections of China. It's an enduring work of Disney art you can only find, well, between Norway and Germany. And that's 180 seconds. I hope you enjoyed our quick spin around the rest of the Disney universe. If you would like to learn more about these Disney adventures or just have a few questions, please come on over. Visit the social media and websites of both the DL Weekly and us, their official travel planners, Concierge. We look forward to planning something special for you and your family. I'm Eric Johnson, and this has been your D180.
Well, thanks, Eric, for that fun tour around the rest of the Disney universe. If you enjoy listening to the show, please consider rating and reviewing the show on your podcast app. It helps other Disney fans become weekly tiers and part of the community.
Now let's get to the news. A galaxy far, far away came to Disneyland 35 years ago recently. This was the first time that fans of the Star Wars universe could actually be a part of the universe, years before Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. The opening of the landmark attraction was celebrated by the park staying open for 60 hours. Stay tuned for our discussion topic later, where we take a deeper dive into Star Tours attraction history.
I will say, the fact that the park was open for 60 hours, up until, I want to say, the last year, for some reason this came up before, I didn't know that the park ever stayed open for that long. It is a crazy amount of time. I would be all about staying in the park for 60 hours. I mean, I probably wouldn't be able to stay the whole 60.
Well, but, you know, it's one of those things, like, logistically, how did that work ticket-wise? What if you, could you just buy one ticket and just be, I mean, I don't know how you could, but and just be in Disneyland for the 60 hours? Did they somehow shuffle people through? Like, I don't, it's crazy to think about how that would work as far as tickets go. Cause, right, you buy a day ticket. So, yeah, just nuts. The other thing that's crazy too, this was a time, right? This attraction opened at a time before FastPass was a thing that nobody even thought of. Genie definitely was not something anybody knew about, or Lightning Lane. So these people were diehard. They were standing in line. A line that stretched all the way down Main Street, I think almost all the way to the gate, if I'm not mistaken, just to experience this brand new thrilling attraction. Just, wow. So cool.
It's crazy. It's amazing that it was 35 years ago at this point, and it's still such a great thing. I will say, spoiler, for anybody who is watching the Book of Boba Fett on Disney+, but Rex is in that show.
Oh, yeah.
Or a droid that is very much of that same caliber is in the show. So very cool to kind of see that. Of course, we know that Rex has taken up DJing in Galaxy's Edge and Oga's Cantina now, but he is, I think he runs like one of the casino games in the new show. So if you want to see a piece of the original Star Tours, that's a great place to do it. Another great sign of progress to get the trams back operating for guests is underway. There are construction walls up around the loading area in downtown Disney, with paving taking place behind the walls. According to our friend David over at Fresh Baked, who reported that there are 7 trams in operation now being tested, up from 4 just not that long ago.
It's kind of funny. A lot of people would probably be like, why are you talking about this? That's not very exciting. Well, for those that have made the long, long walk to and from the parking ramps, this is almost as exciting as like Disneyland reopening, because people have spoken. They miss the trams. They very much miss the trams. I personally have not had to make the walk myself. I know how bad it is to walk to and from your hotel room, especially. It's not so bad when you're going, right? Because you're all excited. You're ready for the day. You just are super excited to get to the parks, into the magic, into the fun. But man, that walk back after you've been on your feet all day and you're just tired and you just want to be, you know, rest and be done and relax, can feel like forever. So it'll be really, really great. Really great for those that utilize the parking structures to have the trams back, to kind of keep that magic alive. And Tag, as we all know, the trams is one of your favorite attractions.
I love the trams. I love, love, love the trams. Now, I will say, I had kind of a weird thought about this paving project.
Okay.
So it's probably nothing. It's probably just paving, you know, repaving part of the drop-off area. But it got me thinking, the last time we saw sections of concrete being torn up like this was charging stations for the trolley, in the red car trolley in DCA. So I'm wondering if not now, because they're getting the trams that they currently have operating.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if the next generation of trams are going to be electric, and if they're going to charge when they're at the loading and unloading zones. How cool would that be? Now,
I mean, yeah.
Again, I totally did not read this anywhere. Nobody has said it. Even David, who likes at Fresh Baked, who likes to throw out wild ideas all the time, he didn't say anything about this either. But it got me thinking back to that, and I feel like it would be such a cool thing for, again, probably not in the next couple years, but down the road, having electric trams that can take you. First of all, think about how greener, right? Because they're talking about greener. I know they already run on liquid propane or natural gas or something, but they'd be quieter. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm excited that that's what it could be, because I don't want to think that it's just paving, because they're not repaving everything. They're only repaving sections. So
I find that suspect, too. Well, and the other thing, too, that we just learned is that, or just learned recently, is that the city of Anaheim, the art buses that are run by the city are going electric, and they're going to be having these charging stations, too. So this is something that's becoming more and more, you know, common in the area, especially, like you said, we have it for the red car trolley now, which hopefully we will be seeing soon. But yeah, I think that would be a really smart move on Disney's part to get, you know, maybe start putting the stuff in place for that to come eventually. I do understand why they're not doing it right away, because the bigger demand right now is just to bring the trams back. They don't want to, you know, push that off further to upgrade the trams at this moment. They can do that down the road. But I think it'd be a really, really smart thing for them to do.
Yeah. Also, this is one of the few times that they're going to be able to do this disruptive kind of thing where they can do it all at one time, where in the future, what they'll have to do is they'll have to block it off and reroute trams and all this other stuff. So this is a great opportunity if they wanted to do any of this type of work with the roadway, that now when it's not running is the best time. Kind of like we talked about when the parks were closed, that it'd be the great time to do all these crazy projects they needed to do that would be so much logistically easier. But, you know, financially, it didn't work out. But I think for the trams, it's going to work out, because obviously Disney's making money again. So let's see. Maybe a couple years from now we'll be proven right. Otherwise, maybe we'll just always be proven wrong. But I like the idea.
Lunar New Year is coming up quickly on February 1st. To celebrate, the mural in downtown Disney on the corner of the former ESPN building has been updated to reflect the occasion. Being the year of the tiger, the mural includes Tigger, along with Mushu, Mulan, Chip, Dale, and Goofy. The artwork was created by Disney Live Entertainment art director Elizabeth Lisa Kang.
This is cute. I like this style of art that they kind of have here. It almost looks like a fun, like, animated postcard, but it's not done in, like, a traditional animation style, I would say. I really like it. I think it's nice and colorful. It's different, I want to say, than the murals that we've seen at this location before. So, super neat that they're doing this. I love that they keep updating this mural, because it's something that keeps bringing guests back again and again to take photos with and stuff. So, I think it's pretty neat. I'm glad that they did it. And again, they're getting different artists and stuff within the Disney company to create these different murals and stuff. So pretty cool.
The other fun thing too, you know, it's a very easy way for them to kind of keep this space fresh, right? Because the ESPN building is kind of just almost a big billboard right now. There's not anything going on inside of the building, but they're at least doing stuff to keep it more fun and exciting on the outside. The last time we were there in December, I don't remember if we talked about this or not, but when we were there in December, they had stuff all over the outside of the building that they had just updated. I want to say there was like different posters for Luca and all sorts of different like billboard looking type things on the side of the building that looked really, really nice. So instead of this just being a big plain empty boring building, they're at least doing something with the outside. Now if only we could do a little something more with the inside, but right now I'll take it. We'll take some extra stuff on the outside.
That was something else I love, and I found myself actually having a few minutes to look at this in the last couple days. I love David over at Fresh Bakes, like, construction updates videos, and I haven't been watching them for a number of reasons recently, but I caught his last two, and one of the things he was talking about was that with the, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, but the construction that's going to be going on in the downtown Disney district, and how Rainforest Cafe and this ESPN Zone building are not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So they've got to do something with them. I feel like they've got to repurpose these for some reason. I mean, both the buildings we've talked about numerous times on the podcast before, both buildings have kitchens. You know, the one where Star Wars Trading Post is in right now, the old Rainforest Cafe building, I'm telling you, Star Wars restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Would be amazing. It'd be so easy for them. They should definitely do that. ESPN Zone, it's just a huge building, so I'm not sure what they're going to do with it, but I hope they do something with that area. But you're absolutely right. with this mural and everything there, it does keep it kind of fresh. They do keep putting different, you know, Disney Plus advertisements and stuff on the outside. But adding something like this, so that's a cute little mural that keeps changing out, I think, you know, it's going to keep bringing people over there, and it's fun. Well, just a little slightlier healthy snack has come to Disney California Adventure. Chocolate-covered bananas have debuted at Clarabelle's ice cream shop. Not only will they be covered in chocolate, but also with a variety of toppings. Rainbow sprinkles, Mickey confetti, crushed peanuts, and a crushed waffle cone are some of those. This follows the return of the bananas to Walt Disney World a couple of months ago. Have you ever had one of these at actually anywhere? I don't know if I've ever had a chocolate-covered banana. Like anywhere, not even
yeah,
Disney.
Yeah, I don't think so. I'm trying to think. I for sure have never had one that's like fresh. I don't even think I've had one that you could buy at the grocery store out of the freezer section.
Yeah, me either.
I like chocolate. I like bananas. I don't know why I've never had a frozen chocolate banana, though. And I would argue it's a bit healthier than like a Mickey premium bar, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I'm happy. I'm looking at these toppings. Love peanuts, like crushed peanuts on them. Love the type of sprinkles they have, because I'm very picky about my sprinkles, and they have really good sprinkles. The Mickey confetti is probably pretty good. I don't know. I might have to try one of these next time we go, because it's just something different, and I haven't tried it before.
Well, some popular Disney treats have seen a price increase recently at Walt Disney World. This could mean that the price changes might be coming to Disneyland in the future. No for sure word on that. That's just a heads up, maybe. Some notable prices are $5 for a 20-ounce bottle of soda. Mickey Premium Bars are up to $6.25, and the Dole Whip is $6.99. It's not certain that these prices will increase at Disneyland, but just something to keep an eye on. Some of the items at the restaurants have also increased by a couple dollars each.
So the article that I got this from was talking about the Disney employee, like corporate employee. I don't remember what her name was or what her position was, but she was talking on a I want to say it was one of the like earnings calls or something, and they were talking about the fact that they could raise prices and it'd be better for people's like waistlines and stuff. And so this, I think, is part of that, because a lot of these things, as an example, I remember a time, and I can't tell you for sure the last time I was there, but when I used to go more frequently in the early 2000s, the bottles of water and the bottles of soda were the same price. I saw a picture from this article we have linked in our show notes that shows that the soda is $4, and I think the water, let me just double check. I think the water is like $3.50.
Yeah, so sodas are up to $5, but bottled water is still $3.50.
Yeah. So it is trying to get people to maybe, go the healthier option because it's cheaper or something. I don't know if, I mean, we've seen that with taxes on things like cigarettes and alcohol and stuff. It's not going to prevent people from doing it. So pricing things, I don't think is the right way to go. But man, Mickey Premium Bars, $6.25. That's expensive.
Well, but they were previously $6, so they only went up a quarter.
I still think that's expensive.
Yeah, so I mean, some of the price hikes were a bit steeper. So Dole Whip would be the steepest price hike. It was $5.99, now $6.99. It's, you know, it's hard to say. We're living in an interesting time. I don't know the reasoning behind why they're hiking up these prices. It might be, you know, supply issues. It could be that there's greater costs on the backside that we don't know about. I have no idea. But, you know, it's just for whatever reason. Maybe it's because of what the woman said about trying to get people to make healthier choices. However, I don't think that adds up. I feel like a Dole Whip should be less expensive than a Mickey Premium Bar. I would think a Dole Whip would be. I'm not a health expert, like, but I would have thought a Dole Whip would have been a better choice.
Healthier.
But
I feel
anyways,
like a Dole Whip is healthier, yeah.
But anyways, you know, whatever the reason is, just kind of keep in mind when you're planning your next trips or when you're visiting the parks that, you know, what you maybe had budgeted prior might not fit what things are costing when you actually go. So just, again, something to keep in mind.
Oh, the Disneyland monorail will be going down for refurbishment, possibly in relation to the changes coming to the downtown Disney District in February. Currently, the monorail is scheduled to close February 14th with no exact end on the calendar yet. I mean, the calendar doesn't go out that much further at this point, so who knows how long this refurbishment's going to be.
you know, this feels like extra sad since the monorail was gone for so long and just recently came back for it to, you know, be closing yet again. It makes sense with all the work that's going to be going on in Downtown Disney that this is a good time to do some repair, some more extensive repair on the monorail. Who knows? Maybe they're going to go big and they're going to do some different things and make changes to the monorail. I don't know, the monorail beams or the like the downtown hub. Maybe that's changing. Who knows? But what we do know is, unfortunately, it will not be available for us for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope it comes back and doesn't stay down too long, because I know that the monorail, especially since the parks have reopened, have had extensive time where it was down in the beginning and then finally it was operating, but then it was kind of struggling throughout the day. So I just hope it comes back soon because I enjoy the monorail.
Well, there are just a few more days to visit a couple locations in Downtown Disney. Earl of Sandwich is currently scheduled to close on January 22nd. Sugar Boo and Company will close on January 16th. The Starbucks location in the same building as Earl of Sandwich has already closed. This is in preparation for the makeover of this section of the shopping district, which will be starting soon.
So, Teresa, I know you're very sad about Earl of Sandwich.
I don't think it's gone forever. I really don't. That might be wishful thinking on my part, but I don't believe, with how popular Earl of Sandwich is, I don't think this is the last we will see of Earl in Anaheim.
No, I don't think so either. No, I don't think so either. In fact, I don't remember if it was Mice Chat or I saw it somewhere, maybe on Twitter or something, but somebody had spoken to the management of Earl of Sandwich and they said that they are planning on opening a temporary location somewhere.
Yeah, that was in Mice Chat, and we do have the link to that in our show notes. Okay. So it doesn't seem like they're planning to be gone for very long either, which is great.
Yeah, which makes me happy because I love me a good Earl of Sandwich. It's a great price for something in Downtown Disney, because things can be pricey. I mean, we just talked about price changes in the parks. So, and they have really good food. So for the price, I'm with you, Therese. I hope that they come back quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to kind of summarize what was in the Mice Chat article, that again, of course, we'll have the link in the show notes too. They did hear from staff that the eatery was hoping to open a temporary location nearby until a new building is constructed. That is not officially confirmed though, but they also said they expect to be part of the new project when it opens. So hopefully that all pans out, because I mean, come on, Earl of Sandwich, one of the best places and most affordable places that you can eat in the Disneyland Resort.
And it's popular. I mean, when we were there, there's a huge line for it. So, with the recent surge in COVID cases due to the Omicron variant, staffing at the resort has been challenging. The resort has been cross-training as many cast members as possible and moving cast members around as much as possible to limit the impact of the shortages. The most notable closure is Napa Rose. Reservations were canceled for guests who had booked dining at the location due to staffing issues.
So, the one thing that I just really want to bring up again, and I feel like all of our weekly tiers are really great about this, but I feel like we really owe it to our cast members, to our magic makers. You know, in this really difficult time, it's got to be very stressful, very difficult to be a cast member right now, especially with, you know, staffing challenging, being cross-trained, being in areas that you're not used to, on top of all your normal daily stuff. You know, just make sure that you're being extra, extra kind to cast members. That doesn't mean that you have to go like super above and beyond and bring gifts and hand things out to every cast member you come in contact with, but just being polite, saying thank you, looking them in the eye, smiling at them, telling them that you're happy that they're there, that they've made your day more magical, making sure you do cast member compliments. Again, that's a hashtag that you can do. You don't even have to do that at City Hall anymore. But there's just, we just really need to make sure that we are showing our love and appreciation of cast members, you know, always, but for sure now I feel like it's more important than it has, you know, than ever to do so. So show your cast members some love, because without them, we wouldn't be able to visit the most magical and happiest place on earth.
Yeah, I've heard through the grapevine that that they're definitely having more challenges with staffing and cast members, not only just with COVID, but calling out sick in general. I mean, I'll tell you, you know, one of the reasons Teresa and I are not together this week is my household, three of the five people in my household came down with COVID this week. Mm-hmm. On top of the fact that I was sick last week, not COVID, thankfully, I tested negative, but I had like, I assume like the seasonal flu or something, and you could probably still hear it in my voice. I'm still a little congested. So, I mean, it's just that time of year. It's winter, stuff goes around on top of a global pandemic that just makes things challenging and hard. So hopefully things start to get better soon. I feel like this recent wave hopefully will kind of peter out pretty soon. I just hope, especially for your sake, Teresa, I just hope that things don't get worse and we end up on another closure or something like that.
For March. So what Tag's referencing is, as you all know, is my wedding. My Disneyland wedding is coming up in just a couple short months. I'm slightly panicking because it felt like it was forever in the distance for a while because we were put on hold for so long. So it's feeling like really real, and now it's like panic mode. But anyways, I, you know, this is so off topic, I don't even care, but I think it would take quite a lot for the parks to close again. What we might see is it might have to be it might come down to a staffing issue thing. I think they're going to try their darndest to keep those gates open and keep the magic going, because we've learned a lot since this pandemic started way too long ago. So I'm hopeful that the gates won't have to close, but I am also, yes, very, I'm a little nervous for the wedding, but I'm also very hopeful. I think everything will be as wonderful and beautiful and as magical as it can be.
I hope so for your sake. And of course, all the cast members mm-hmm. that rely on Disney for their livelihood and stuff like that, because closing it down again and the local area, just in general, we saw how devastating that was to the local area. So let's hope. Crossing mm-hmm. fingers. All right. Let's move on to some happier news.
The Disney Vacation Club members should be aware of some new changes coming to the program. Interval International Exchanges are now officially available. Exchanges with this program include thousands of resorts all over the world, including high-quality properties such as Marriott, Sheraton, Hyatt, and Westin. Disney stays include not only Disney Vacation Club resorts, but also traditional Disney Resort Hotel exchange options. Disney experiences include exchange options like Disney Cruise Line voyages, Adventures by Disney guided trips, National Geographic expeditions, and the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser.
So I don't know much about things with exchanges, but I'm guessing what this is basically opening up the ability to either trade or use points that you get through your Vacation Club membership to stay at various locations. And it's interesting to me that possibly if I'm understanding this correctly, it's interesting to me that you would be able to get like a Disney Cruise Line booking or a guided trip or an expedition. Obviously, those things are going to cost more of your points or something like that. But it's interesting. Same thing with the Galactic Star Cruiser. That's just such a, you know, that's almost like a cruise ship situation. So it's very interesting.
The Disney Vacation Club is something on my ever-growing, ever-expanding Disney bucket list because there's just so much, right? We love Disneyland. We love Disney. But I don't remember all of the extra things all the time, especially like Adventures by Disney. And I haven't been on a Disney cruise yet. There's just so much to the company outside of movies and parks that gives you all these wonderful experiences. So if, you know, with how we're understanding this with, you know, how you can turn your Disney Vacation Club points into more than just Disney Park Resort hotel stays, and it could be a cruise, it could be an Adventure by Disney, those other things makes it even more enticing to me to sign up, because let's face it, you know, Disneyland's would be, or Alani's the other one too, can't forget Alani, but you know, let's face it, Disneyland's where we like to be and where we spend the most time, as you all know. So I can't justify, nor can I afford to stay at a Disney property every time we're at Disneyland, nor do I think it necessarily makes the most sense, because you have much more reasonably priced hotels literally across the street. Where Disney World, totally different monster. You can't, if you stay off property, you're staying like 20 minutes away. I get that. We're very fortunate that we have options and choices for Disneyland. But so long story short, I might have to look more closely into becoming a Disney Vacation Club member at some point if I can turn that into all of these other wonderful Disney experiences.
Yeah. Well, the next century of the Walt Disney Company is just around the corner, and CEO Bob Chapek has released some goals for the next century. Chapek released the three pillars of success in a memo to cast members. The three pillars are storytelling excellence, innovation, and relentless focus on the audience. On the surface, these pillars are exactly what the public expects from the company currently, and are nothing new. Time will tell what these pillars mean for the company going forward and what will change based on these.
You know, I think, right, surface level, like you said, they sound like pretty obvious, pretty straightforward things. Disneyland News Today did have the full memo that was released to cast members. They do have that printed if you want to read through the full thing. But it does kind of go deeper into each one, you know, what they mean more by storytelling, what they mean by innovation, all that sort of things. So it's interesting because, yeah, it feels very on brand for Disney, but then it also makes me wonder why he's reiterating it. So if he's, you know, if we're going to do something a little bit differently with these than what we're used to, or, you know, it seemed common. How do I want to say this? I don't want to sound rude, but it seemed like Disney common sense. So maybe these weren't defined this way before, and so he's just retitling what we're defining them as. I don't really know. I'm curious, like you, to see what this means going forward.
Yeah, it's interesting. So the story, I'm just going to take a couple quick parts from his memo. So we talked about storytelling excellence. With that, he said he's establishing a new standing monthly meeting with senior creative leaders to discuss opportunities and will encourage collaboration and sharing of best practices and stimulate cross-studio ideation. It sounds interesting. Innovation is just basically talking about innovating, and especially innovative as they seek to bring stories to life in new ways, particularly if they enhance what we call our franchise ecosystem, which I think is things like the Marvel universe, sure, the Star Wars universe, those kind of things. And then the relentless focus on their audience. And one of the things that's interesting is, of course, they say their most important guide is the consumer, which, like, obviously we've heard that before. But they said right now their behavior tells us and our industry that the way they want to experience entertainment is changing, and changing fast thanks to technology and the pandemic. We must evolve with our audience, not work against them, and we'll put them at the center of every decision we make. Sure. I feel like some of the things that they've done, like the technology changes that they talk about, like, oh, people want it to be this way. I feel like Disney puts it out there and we just kind of have to use it. It's not necessarily the thing that people would necessarily choose or go in that direction completely. Again, this is me referencing stuff like Genie Plus and Lightning Lane. I feel like people like those ideas. I just feel like the way that they've kind of put them out there maybe is not the best, most consumer-focused experience, I suppose.
One thing, it's interesting that you bring up, like, Genie and the Lightning Lane. One thing that I did not include in this week's update was some news actually from Walt Disney World. And there's, you know, it's no secret that there's some constraints and there's some, you know, there's a lot of bumps that need to be worked out to get Genie running more smoothly than the Genie is running right now, Genie Plus and Lightning Lane. But it did sound like, I'd have to re-find what the exact things were, but it did sound like that they actually did make the decision and hit pause for selling some of the Lightning Lanes in Walt Disney World. So that gives me a little bit of hope that they're not just like, oh, we're just going to keep selling it because people are going to keep buying it, that there were some problems that they recognized and they just halted and stopped sales. So that gives me some hope that they, A, make that decision to do that, because that is more in the interest of the consumer than obviously the business, because they stop sales on something. Right. And then B, that they have the ability to just kind of switch it on and off, because sometimes we assume things like that are probably easy and there's just some magical switch somewhere that you just boop, boop, on, off. But, you know, that's not always reality. So it is good to know that A, they have that ability, and B, that they will make that choice if needed.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, like I said, how this goes. Obviously, they had, before the pandemic, they had a lot of things planned for their 100th anniversary.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what they kind of, what that's kind of morphed into, because they did have a couple of years here of, you know, some struggles that they had to deal with because of the pandemic and everything like that. So I'm excited. We'll see how it goes. Obviously, over the next 100 years, we're going to see a lot of change. Obviously, the last 100 years, we've seen a lot of change. So it'll be interesting to see. I won't live to see it, but I think it'll be really interesting what the parks will be like 100 years from now.
You're not going to live until you're 140?
140? Yeah, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. They you know, they keep saying things like that medicine and technology is getting better, that people's lives are going to get extended longer, but I don't think at this point in my life at 40 that it's going to increase that much over the next few years to keep me alive that long. So maybe our children that are being born now might have that opportunity, but probably not us.
Psst, avast there. Here comes seeking questions and long-lost Disney information, eh? Sure, you come to the proper place, but keep a weather eye open, mates. And hold on tight, with both hands, if you please. There be squalls ahead, and James and Vern waiting for them what don't answer correctly.
Welcome back to Trivia Land for this second trivia round of 2022. I hear that Eon took it pretty easy on you last week, so are you ready for some tougher listener-submitted questions this week?
We'll see.
All right. Well, we'll start you off with a question submitted by listener Stephen S. How many full-size starships, not counting escape pods, are located within Galaxy's Edge?
How many full-size ships? Ooh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I can think of 6, so I'm going to go with 6.
I'm thinking, hold on. I'm writing down what I'm thinking.
Should we talk through them?
Okay, so I've got the A-Wing, the X-Wing.
Are those the ones that are by Smuggler's Run?
That's the ones that are on
the
path.
Okay, perfect, yep.
And there's the TIE Defender thing or whatever it is that Kylo Ren comes out at.
Yep.
There's the Docking Bay 7 transport on top of the restaurant.
Yep.
There's Poe Dameron's X-Wing, which is in the queue for Smuggler's Run.
Yep.
There's the transport that you get on for Smuggler's Run.
Ooh, does that count?
There's, of course, the Millennium Falcon.
Yep, I counted the Millennium Falcon. I don't know if the transport counts or not.
Well, it's there.
Yeah. Oh, well then, okay. So, and then we don't count, you said no escape pods, right?
No escape pods.
Okay, so so 7, because then I was thinking about the escape pod at the end, but that doesn't count.
Now, Vern, just for technicality purposes, we're not counting the Star Destroyer that you end up on in the attraction, are we?
No.
Okay, good. Then I will say 7, although I feel like I'm missing something, but 7.
I think there might be another one somewhere, but I'm going to say 7 as well. If we can count the transport. Otherwise, 6.
I feel like we count the transport. That's a ship.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not counting Poe Dameron's X-Wing, because that's in the same little courtyard.
Yeah, but that's a full, like, I guess it was hard for me to count, because you can't, like, walk around and see the full thing, whereas all the other ships you can walk almost all the way around. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I get your logic.
I'll stick with 7, though.
So you both saying 7?
Both saying 7.
The final answer.
Final answers.
All right. Your second question, submitted by listener Chris Y. Where can you find a carving of a boy jousting?
Oh, in Fantasyland. Where the heck is it, though? It's, I want to say it's...
You know this?
Huh? You don't... Yeah, you've never seen it?
No.
It's in Fantasyland. I want to say it's the entrance to Pinocchio.
Sure. Whatever Teresa says.
It's
Is that your final answer,
Yeah,
Tig?
It's either the entrance to Pinocchio or it's that little shop up in front. But I'm going to stick with my gut and go with entrance to Pinocchio.
Okay. Your third question, submitted by listener Donna S. What is the deepest river in Disneyland?
The deepest river in Disneyland. Like in Disneyland or Disneyland Resort?
Knowing what I know of the answer, I'm going to say Disneyland.
Deepest river?
Do you think it's the Rivers of America or do you think it's the Jungle Cruise River?
I feel like this is a trick question.
I'm going to say Rivers of America.
See, I don't think Rivers of America are that deep.
They are in the middle. It's deeper in the middle because the ship
I'm
has
sure
to go down.
It is. I still don't think it's that.
What do you think's deeper than the Rivers of America?
See, I'm wondering. I'm wondering. Technically, what we're calling a river. So, Vern, are we counting like something that you would call outside of Disneyland a river, or are we being weird and technical? Like, could you say something from, you know, like the flume of It's a Small World?
I will count Pirates or Small World or Splash Mountain or any of those as rivers for purposes of this question. But I will not count Grizzly Rapids because it's not in Disneyland.
Grizzly
Rapids. Right.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to stick with my gut instinct. My first instinct was It's a Small World, although I'm probably wrong. And Teresa, you said what? Rivers of America?
Yep, the Rivers of America.
Okay. Final answers.
Final.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, because the sub lagoon's not a river.
I went, no, that's a lagoon.
Yeah, that's a lagoon.
That is pretty deep, though.
Fourth and final listener-submitted question and regular round question comes from listener Whitney N. What are the natural rock formations that inspired the landscape of Big Thunder Mountain Railroad?
Oh, dang it. There's a couple of them. I'm trying to remember what they're called, though.
Oh, gosh. You know what's really dumb about this question? I'm pretty sure we've had it before.
I'm sure we have, too.
I feel like we've had it twice before because I remember calling back to my first one and was like, ugh.
Apparently it's a good question.
Variations of this wording have been around. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like it's rock formations from like Monument Valley.
Yeah, I think it's yeah.
But I think there's also another place too, but the only one that I can remember is Monument Valley.
That's also what you're saying?
Yep. Okay. I feel like there's a second one, but I don't remember what the second place was. Kind of like how the like other places of the park, for example, Main Street, it's kind of, you know, goes back and forth between two different places for the places that inspired Main Street, for example. So I feel like there's a couple for Big Thunder, but the only one I can remember or that comes to mind is Monument Valley.
Sure.
And your bonus question for this week, we're going back to what queue are you in?
Oh, no.
I think this is going to be kind of an easy one. I feel like I gave you a gimme here. But for any newer listeners that may not be familiar with the rules on this one, there are four clues to tell them what queue they might be standing in. If they can figure it out within the first two clues, they get full credit for a point. And if it takes them all four clues, they get half credit. And if they can't figure out what queue they're in, they get no credit for this point, this question.
All right.
No points for this question. So, what queue are you in? Your first clue, there are edible plants.
Okay, we're in Tomorrowland.
More than likely, yes.
Your second clue, you can see the Mark Twain.
What? Edible plants, I can see the Mark Twain.
Oh, you could see that from either Star Tours or Buzz Lightyear. Because if you look through past the hub, through past partners. You could look right into
you could get a Frontierland's
gates
it.
And see the river, see it way off in the distance.
And these are like, I could actually like pick this and eat this. It's not like representing an edible plant, correct?
What does that even mean?
I'm thinking like Winnie the Pooh has fake, like, what is it? There's fake.
No, there are actual edible plants.
They're really edible. It's not just like, looks like it could
truly
be edible.
Like,
Winnie the Pooh has like fake carrots.
And
that's what I'm trying to say.
Pop it into your mouth.
He could also be talking about the Astro Orbiter because he's not. I mean, but I guess it would be. No, because Star Tours doesn't have the edible plants close enough for you to eat. So it's got to be Buzz Lightyear.
I'm locking in an ass. No. Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah, I'm going to lock in a Buzz as well.
Lightyear. Astro Blasters.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to lock in?
I think so. Go big or go home. Are you locking in, Tag?
Yes.
Because I don't remember if there are edible plants close enough to the Astro Orbiter.
I don't think so either. That's kind of in the middle of the walkway, and I don't think they have a lot of shrubbery there from what I can remember. And Star Tours, you're right next to the building for the entrance, and then you're inside. Yep. So it's got to be Buzz Lightyear. if unless there's some other edible place that we're just being ridiculous.
What are our last two clues?
And clue number three. There are wrought iron railings.
Wrought iron railings. I mean, I guess that could be also at the end of the queue for Buzz Lightyear there.
I'm getting less confident.
And clue number four, there's a pet cemetery.
Oh my gosh.
Haunted Mansion.
Dang it.
He tricked us.
Ooh, that was a super good trick, Vern. That was incredibly tricky.
Yeah, trickery.
Wow. So it's the Haunted Mansion, for those of you that didn't piece together what it was.
We haven't got an official answer yet, but that would be the guess.
So that was good, though, because the edible plants that Vern's referring to are the plants that they've installed in the pet cemetery, because next to the rabbit, they've planted carrots. There's, like, garlic and chives, maybe. There's some fragrant garlicky kind of thing over by the skunk. Ooh, tricky. Tricky. I thought you said this was an easy one.
I didn't expect you to lock in so hard early on.
It was easy until the end. Dang.
And I thought the Mark Twain was going to pull you out of Tomorrowland, but it didn't.
I mean, like I said, you could catch an ever so slight glimpse. It was those edible plants. You definitely threw us off on those edible plants.
Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Keep listening until after the discussion topic, and we'll find out how we did tonight.
Well, for this week, we thought what better attraction to do a deep dive on than Star Tours, since, as we said earlier, just celebrated their 35th anniversary on January 9th. It seems both crazy to me that it's only been 35 years and also that, you know, it seems like it's been forever ago and also not that long ago. Star Tours has been here my entire existence. It's been here almost your entire existence. You know, so I didn't get to visit a park with no Star Tours. So to me, it feels like it's been there forever, but I know it hasn't been there forever. So it was really interesting. So I hope you all enjoy our deep dive on the history pre-Star Wars, Star Tours, and how Star Tours kind of came to be.
Now, we haven't done one of these for a while, so it's kind of nice getting back to our kind of roots. And I always want to say a big shout out to Teresa, who spent a lot of time going through and working on this for this week. So thank you, Teresa, for finding all of this great information that we're about to share with everybody. And I agree with you. The first years that I went to, I did not realize how new Star Tours was when I first went to Disneyland, because I'm pretty sure upon reflecting that the first time I ever went to Disneyland was 1988, I want to say. And this opened in 1987. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I didn't realize it was that new at the time, I guess. I guess as far back as I can remember, Star Tours always felt like it had been there for a while. So very, very interesting. Although technologically, it, like you said, it doesn't seem like it's been that long either, because it seems pretty high tech even by today's standards. So
it
lead us
really,
off, Teresa.
Yeah,
what
it really,
got us here?
Really is amazing to me. Like the more, so I will be upfront before we dive into this too much. You know, I enjoy Star Tours, but I never had. I have such a deeper appreciation for this attraction after. You know, the more I learn about it, the more I appreciate it, and the more I understand, like, how amazing it was and how amazing it continues to be. Because, right, you get on and out, you're like, oh, that's fun. You don't realize everything that goes into some of these attractions. And this may seem, you know, compared to other things that are in the parks, I'm looking at you, Rise of the Resistance, this might not feel and seem like it's as big of a deal, but it is. It's just, it's crazy. So, of course, we have links in the show notes to all of the different places that I pulled this information from. So if you want to kind of read through more than what we're giving you, please do. Because, yeah, like I said, it's just, it's really incredible. So let's start at the beginning. Because really, when you think about it, how did a non-Disney story end up becoming such a big attraction at Disneyland, one that's been there now for 35 years. The first non-Disney thing that I could find, I could be correct. Star Tours was the first, like, ride on attraction that was non-Disney. Everything else was either original ideas or something that was based on a Disney film or Disney story. However, in the late 70s, Imagineers were looking for new stories and heroes to take, you know, for park attractions. At that time, though, Disney was not doing so well in the film department. It was sort of a dark period for the time. However, during that same time that Disney wasn't doing so great, George Lucas was, like, revolutionizing and changing the way and, like, changing pop culture from here on forward and literally creating his own universe full of news stories and characters that were crazy, crazy popular.
Yeah. Of course, you know, Star Wars, it's kind of, I mean, now we've had a revival of Star Wars, mm-hmm. So it kind of makes sense that there's Star Wars in the Disney parks, and Disney, of course, now owns Star Wars, so it makes total sense now for something like a Galaxy's Edge. But at the time, it was crazy to bring something that wasn't Disney created into the park. But with this, like you said, with this whole universe of Star Wars, it's very exciting. So how does the company like Disney, who was not doing the best at that time, convince somebody like George Lucas, who was doing amazing, to trust them with this popular characters and stories from this universe? Well, Disney had a couple things working in their favor, luckily, for everybody. The first meeting happened when Ron Miller was president of the Disney company. So Ron Miller is, of course, the husband of Diane Disney Miller, who is Walt's daughter. So his son-in-law basically ran the company for a little while, or was the president of the company. A number of concepts for the attraction were discussed, but this first meeting really opened the door for the two companies to work together. Shortly after they started talking about this, of course, Michael Eisner and Frank Wells came into their lead roles with the Disney company and kind of took over to kind of save it, because this was during that time period where Disney almost got taken over by some other mm-hmm. Wall Street company, and at the time probably would have been broken up into a bunch of smaller companies. I can't even imagine that happening. But with Eisner's previous role at Paramount Pictures, he had worked with Lucas on Raiders of the Lost Ark, so Eisner was happy to work with Lucasfilm again, and that's kind of what brought them all together. So not only did Michael Eisner and Frank Wells coming save Disney, but also laid the groundwork for this amazing partnership to happen to bring Star Tours to the park.
The other thing to kind of that I want to mention too was, you know, why George Lucas? You know, because there was, of course, yes, he has his amazing Star Wars world, but, you know, it was Tony Baxter, I believe, that was really kept going to Miller and saying, hey, like, I think we need to talk with this guy. We need to talk with Lucas. We need to try and get something, you know, going here, all this stuff. So Tony Baxter actually was a catalyst in that first, you know, in why Lucas and why that first meeting took place. So that's pretty amazing. And as we know, well, as some of you may know, as some of you may be learning now, Tony Baxter was played a pretty big role in the creation of Star Tours. So, but on the other side of that table, It was actually a very easy decision for George Lucas to agree to work with Disney and to trust him with his creations. Lucas, huge fan of Disneyland. In fact, his first trip to the parks was on the second day that the park was open in 1955. So, so it helps that he was a big park fan. He loved the brand. He loved what they were doing with their parks. So even though they were in a little bit of a slump at the time, that didn't seem to worry him because he knew that they were capable of doing really great and really wonderful things. Lucas had actually stated multiple times that if he couldn't build his own theme park, Disney would be his first choice to create an attraction with.
So they decided they were going to create this attraction. So what would it be like? Now, I've watched, there's a behind the attraction thing that was on Disney Plus. It's episode 3 that talks about Star Tours a little bit. I saw some, of course, the Imagineering story, I think, talks about it as well. So there's a lot of media out there other than just a bunch of articles that talk kind of about Star Tours and how it came about. What will the attraction look like? There's a million different ways you could take Star Wars. So a lot of ideas were tossed around, of course, including a Jedi Training Academy roller coaster. Now, when I first read this, I thought, Jedi Training Academy roller coaster? They have a Jedi Training Academy. How do you do little kids in little Jedi uniforms fighting things on a roller coaster? Well, they would have two tracks, very similar to, actually, if you've ever been to, it's not there anymore, but in Universal, in the Hogwarts area or the Harry Potter area of Islands of Adventure, they used to have a Dueling Dragons coaster, and they had two different dragons that would kind of go together. So it would kind of be like that, where there would be a light side and a dark side, and riders would choose which one they wanted to take. I don't know. This also reminds me of the Matterhorn, because I always am trying to figure out which side do I like better, and I feel like one side might be more popular than the other, but as you see with all these different attractions, it doesn't really matter. But I don't know. Coaster seems, I mean, you already had Space Mountain, probably, right? Mm-hmm. This was around the time Space Mountain was kind of getting started. So I don't know. Two roller coasters at Tomorrowland, I think, would have been just a bit much.
Yeah, and that's ultimately one of the main reasons they decided not to, you know, indoor roller coaster. Well, we kind of already have that. It's called Space Mountain. And then the other problem, too, was this was such a big idea with having the multiple tracks and the fact that the riders could choose, you know, there were different points in it that the riders could somehow choose which, you know, they'd make decisions, light or dark kind of decisions. So they would kind of have control. So then you have all these multiple tracks, so then this building is like, oh, okay, this is way too big. There's no way we're going to get this to kind of fit in. So they kept thinking and they kept trying to figure out what to do. Well, it was around the same time that the Imagineers were actually just kind of spitballing and working on the possibility of an attraction that used flight simulators. Well, in 1984, George Lucas was visiting the Imagineering campus and came across some of the storyboards that the Imagineers had made up for their supposed maybe we could do this simulator ride-based attraction. He saw how this technology could work very well with the Star Wars attraction. And shortly after that, Star Tours was born and created. And that's kind of what made them to decide to go this route, was some mocked up storyboards, because they were just, you know, bouncing ideas off the wall, and this one just happened to stick. They didn't stick the way they thought it was going to stick, or with who they thought it was going to stick with, but it makes perfect sense.
That's kind of like the best time when things happen, right? Is when you throw things at the wall, and maybe you have something laying around, and somebody comes and, oh, if you do this in this way or that way, you could really create something really neat and unique and fun. And I think that's exactly what happened with Star Tours. Well, the Imagineers began to work on the overall story and purchased the flight simulators, while Lucas and his team worked on the special effects and the film that would be projected inside of the simulators. With the attraction story and technology coming along, the next question was, where would they build it? Eisner and Wells were looking to overhaul the parks and had several attractions that were either outdated or not relevant any longer. One of those attractions was Adventure Through Inner Space in Tomorrowland. Now, I never got to experience Adventure Through Inner Space. I wish I could have, but obviously Star Tours is a much, better attraction than that probably was at the time. But, I don't know how they do this, to be honest with you. I don't know how Imagineering or the Walt Disney Company looks at any park and at any attraction and say, okay, that can be replaced. We're going to put something else in there. I feel like, people always say it's like choosing your favorite child or whatever. Yeah. It's like, It's so difficult that I don't know. I don't know how they would do it.
So yeah, no, that's exactly right. But I'm sure there's if you look at it from a business stance and not the emotional, like, nostalgic right. stance that we the fans look at, it probably makes a little bit more sense in some cases rather than others. But the thing that I thought was interesting with this, and they do a really great job, highly, highly recommend going to Disney Plus, watching the Behind the Attractions episode. Again, it's episode 3, which is on Star Tours. And like listening to this, because first of all, it's a fantastic show. So watch all of them. Don't just watch the one about Star Tours. But it's right. really cool. It really dives into the process and like the creation of the attractions as we know it today. But one thing that stood out to me with Star Tours is all the other attractions started with an idea that then became a story, that then became a ride system, that then became, you know, it all started with the idea. Star Tours, on the other hand, started with the technology and like, this is the ride vehicle we're going to use. Now figure out how we're going to do something Star Wars with it and how we're going to make it kind of like work with what we're going to do. So they built everything around the attraction vehicle. Whereas like, for example, Haunted Mansion, that was going to be a walkthrough attraction, which later then had the Omni Movers. Same thing with Pirates of the Caribbean. That wasn't originally going to, it's not like they started with a boat and said, okay, what can we theme this boat on? Oh, mm-hmm. pirates, you know, that kind of thing. So it's really interesting to me that they kind of created this one almost backwards and compared to other ones.
Well, that kind of happened, you know, you were talking about ride technologies being completely separate from like the storytelling. I remember, I think it was Imagineering Story that they were talking about, because they were trying to figure out the Pirates of the Caribbean, the Pirates of the Caribbean, they were trying to figure that situation out. And the Flume from It's a Small World, they were like, that's it. Mm-hmm. And then they also, you know, and then the Omni Mover system and stuff, of course, for the Haunted Mansion and stuff as well. It's just, you know, you kind of come up, you have these problems, and sometimes you're like, oh, maybe that's the solution. We didn't even think about it that way. Mm-hmm. So, very interesting. I can't imagine thinking, oh, just use a flight simulator for this. You know, it's like, especially in the 80s when that was like pretty new and really advanced technology that I'm sure, you know, the military used, or these big companies like Boeing probably used to test things. And the fact that they're like, yeah, let's make a theme park attraction out of it. That's a great idea. That's just crazy. And you know, we still get stuff like that today. I mean, if you look at Rise of the Resistance, which mm-hmm. in the Behind the Attraction episode, they talk about this. There's a sequence of that attraction that is very much like Star Tours and uses that kind of movements and stuff. So it's very cool that even something from 35 years ago is being used in a state-of-the-art attraction today. It's pretty dang cool.
Yeah. So making Star Tours a reality did come with some challenges. The new technology was complicated, and the team responsible for programming the movements of the vehicles had a major uphill battle. So they figured out, like, okay, first of all, like Tag was saying, flight simulators, I don't believe, had been used for any attraction type thing before. So they had to figure out, what are the limitations? What can this thing do? We know that it simulates a flight, but how, you know, what are the movements we can make it do? And what are the movements that we can make it do without everybody getting, you know, feeling sick on it? And they, you know, all this kind of stuff. So they had a lot of stuff to figure out. But one of the big things, once they finally had their vision and decided it's going to be a touring company and you're going to like be on this flight, whatever. So they had to figure out how to program the vehicle to go along with Lucasfilm's wonderful video it's funny. If you watch the Behind the Attraction episode, Tony Baxter keeps calling it, it's not a movie, it's a window, because you're looking out the window and all you can see is like the first person view as if you're looking straight out these windows. So anyway, so they have to they have this wonderful thing, but oh, how do I make sure that we like get around that asteroid or like, you know, that kind of stuff. So they had to figure out how to program it. Well, they couldn't do that normally. So the team actually had to custom develop new programming, which allowed Imagineers to use a joystick to create the movements in real time while they were watching the film play on a screen. So it's kind of like a giant video game. It's like the thing I was thinking about with the joystick.
Yeah, I'm just imagining your because it can be difficult, because you know, like a video game, you move the joystick and the screen moves to you.
Yeah, yeah.
This is, you're trying to make sure that your simulator moves the way that the attraction, yeah, or that the window is going through. So that's crazy. You didn't talk about this yet, but one of the things that was in the behind the attraction, I think, that was interesting was they had issues because back then we didn't have digital video.
Oh yeah.
They had projectors, so they had to figure out how to get these, how to get this film to play reliably over and over and over again with all of this movement of the cabin, because the projector had to be on board the ride vehicle. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if anybody's ever worked with 35 millimeter film, it needs to be kind of static. Moving it and jostling around is so crazy that it can, that things could easily get derailed and screw up things, and it needs to be reliable, of course, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just amazing the innovations that they had to come up with for some of these things. And I can't even imagine trying to steer the simulator with the video. Oh, how cool, though. How cool. Well, another issue they found was that the show building wasn't big enough for the range of movements that the simulators required. The roof needed to be raised. As you can imagine, this original plan and budget for the attraction did not include this additional cost. The final cost for the attraction was $32 million, which was $5 million over the original budget, and opening day had to be pushed out 2 months. I feel like during the 80s, especially during the late part of the 80s here, I feel like they had to push attractions out a little bit because Splash Mountain was the same way. They had to push it out because they had issues with the logs and everything else. And this issue with Star Tours had to be pushed out a couple months. So actually, what was this? If it opened in January, it was supposed to open, what, November? It was going to be like a good like pre-Christmas opening? That's interesting time of year.
You know, but 2 months compared to current times when we push attractions back that are being created is like, that's nothing. That's basically you're on time. So the fact that they had to rebuild part of the building to be able to get these flight simulators, you know, to work how they needed them to work is just crazy. Again, I cannot say enough times, go watch the Imagineering Story episode 3, because some of the other, so they have the flight simulators, right? But then they had to figure out things like, well, how do we get people on and off the flight simulators? And how do we make sure that those boarding, like the boarding ramps aren't in the way while this flight simulator is bouncing around doing its thing? And who's the person, you know, who's going to be captaining this ship? Because it was really important to George Lucas that there was a pilot or like a physical captain on board. So then they actually had to create a whole new character, Rex, which then the other interesting thing with that, too, as you were saying with the film, was that's being bounced around all over the place. Well, so is this animatronic Rex. So they had to be very, very, how do I want to say it? They had to be very conscientious of that when designing this brand new character. So it's just amazing because you don't, again, like we go to this attraction, we enjoy it. I'm an adult. I fully feel like I just boarded some intergalactic transport and just did a trip around the world and now I'm back in Disneyland. I know that's not reality, but dang, I sure feel like it was. Again, we've talked about this before. I genuinely think when I walk into the Haunted Mansion that somehow all of that is fitting into that outside mansion that I can see from the street. I don't even, like, it doesn't even occur to me that there's a whole separate building that actually houses it. They're masters at doing this. So the fact that you have to think of things like, oh, these things are going to be bouncing around umpteen times a day. We need to make sure that they can withstand that. It's just a whole different level that I, as the guest, don't even think about, nor do I know I need to appreciate it. Just crazy.
Well, and not to mention, one of the things, too, that they talked about with creating this adventure for guests was everybody, and I think everybody talked about this, too, and I can imagine being a Star Wars fan back in the day, everybody wants to do the trench run. Yep. So they had to bring in the trench run to do the final, you know, explosion or whatever of the Death Star. So I just wanted to mention that because I know that the original story before they redid it in 2012 to be the Avengers Continue, which is kind of an offshoot of what's in there now where they can digitally change and have random different adventures and stuff you can go on. But at the time, the first, you know, bunch of years that it was open, it was just the one trip with Star Tours. And of course, it had that trench run in there. So I don't know.
It also was not 3D. It did not become 3D until they revised it for The Adventure Continues as well, which is something that I kind of forget about myself because it feels like, oh, that's been forever. Well, it really hasn't been that long.
I forgot about that. Also, to put into perspective, we talked about that the final cost of the attraction was $32 million. Just like 7 or 8 years later, when Indiana Jones opened, that was a $100 million attraction. So prices go up quick.
Well, on January 9th, 1987, Star Tours was open for guests to enjoy. Disneyland hosted a 60-hour party to accommodate all of the excited guests and fans. The opening ceremony for the new immersive attraction featured Princess Leia, Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Chewbacca, Ewoks, Darth Vader, and, of course, Stormtroopers. Michael Eisner and George Lucas were joined by Mickey, Minnie, R2-D2, and C-3PO for the official ribbon cutting. It is not as good as what Disney is working on currently, but they did kind of have their own version of a lightsaber that they used to do the ribbon cutting, which I thought was very, very clever, very on brand for Star Tours.
This reminds me of the Galaxy's Edge opening ceremony that they had, because they had Bob Iger there, and they brought out Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill, and they had Chewbacca in the Millennium Falcon, and they did fireworks and everything. So that kind of reminds me of this a little bit, but obviously in Tomorrowland in the 80s when... now, do we know, was this like the first time that Luke and Leia and Han Solo and Chewbacca and everything were in the Disney parks?
As far as I know, it was, because Star Wars was not part of Disneyland or any Disney parks up until Star Tours came. So as far as I know, I don't know of any like promotion period that they had these characters in the park to kind of build excitement. But yeah, as far as I know, that was the first time that those characters were in Disneyland.
So, of course, you know, it was a great attraction. It's still popular today, but the response from guests was overwhelmingly positive back in 1987 when it opened, so much so that plans were quickly made to install the attraction in other Disney parks. Star Tours opened at Tokyo Disneyland on July 12, 1989, Walt Disney World on December 15, 1989. That was a lot in just a couple years. Mm-hmm. And in Paris on April 12, 1992, I assume is what you meant to say.
Yes, yeah.
Not 1922.
It's crazy. So, yes. So
it opened with Disneyland Paris, basically.
Yep. So Disneyland was the original Star Tours. But yeah, like Tag just said, it was a pretty quick turnaround to get it into the other parks. Boom, boom, right away there in 1989. Just crazy. But it was interesting to me because I didn't realize that Tokyo was the second place to have a Star Tours. I always assumed World was the second place for Star Tours. The reasoning for Disney World getting a Star Tours I thought was interesting because it was part of MGM Studios, and it was an attraction that they already had, you know, created. So the only thing that they had to do was install it. So it was kind of, it's actually a budget decision that they decided to put it there. It fit with the, you know, it fit with the area, it fit with the theming, and it was a quote-unquote inexpensive attraction that they could place in this park that was already costing huge, huge, huge amounts of money. So it was a good balance point. The one cool thing, it is the same as Disneyland's version. It has the same amount of transports inside. But the big difference between Disneyland and Walt Disney World is the exterior queue and the exterior facade. It looks more like you're in a forest if you're in Disneyland, like Endor. Mm-hmm. It looks like a forest or like Endor in Walt Disney World versus ours is much more, well, it looks more like a flight, like an airport or something would look. It looks more like, I don't know, industrial looking, I guess.
Yeah, the one in Hollywood Studios looks, because it was supposed to be themed like movies, right? So it was themed like the planet of Endor because there's an AT-AT walker out in front and stuff like that, which it's kind of sad because it's supposed to be Hollywood Studios, so you had the backsides are kind of open and it seems very film-like. But I remember as a little kid seeing that entrance, that front part of Hollywood Studios version, and thinking that is amazing that they have the trees and they have the AT-ATs, and like, who hasn't wanted to see an AT-AT in person? And of course now with Rise of the Resistance we have that again, but actually inside of a ride and the thing actually moves and stuff. So but Star Tours and Disney World did it first.
That they did. So, yeah. So the original Star Tours ran from 1987 to July 26, 2010. And then it was replaced and updated, like Tag was saying before, with Star Wars The Adventure Continues. So a couple of things that I had learned, again, from the wonderful episode on Disney Plus. But one of the reasons that that George was so sold with how they were doing Star Tours and with it being, you know, the film, was that it could change, that it wasn't always going to be the exact same thing, and, you know, that they had options. Well, with the technology when they first did it, having options was not super easy. So when the prequels came out, that was kind of a great and a natural point to change and update Star Tours. But the other great thing, too, then, is they were able to not have to rely on a projector and physical film. They could do digital things. And with that came the randomized system that we have today, which you have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it's not always the same. I don't remember how many different combinations of, you know, rides there are, but you could, you know, your starting point, your middle point, and your ending point are always different and never the same. So that's kind of something that's pretty cool, that even 35 years ago, when they first created and designed this attraction, was something that they were thinking that far ahead about and thinking, we want to be able to change this down the road. The prequels weren't even a thing. The last three episodes that we just had weren't even a thing. All of the other things that have come out of the Star Wars universe were not a thing then, but they had that much foresight to think that far into the future to say, nope, we want to be able to do what we want with this, I think is super, super cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really neat to be able to have an attraction that you can swap stuff. And I feel like Disney has done really good, and Lucasfilm have done really good since the Adventures Continue portion of adding stuff, because they added stuff from the new movies that came out and stuff like that. So it's good, because for a long time, I mean, from, you know, 1987 to 2012, there was just the one video in there. So the fact that they've been able to add stuff as time has gone on, super cool. And then, of course, with the randomizer, they can switch between everything. In fact, I want to say the last time, Teresa, you and I were there, we had a one that we had not been on before, like a set of sequences.
Yeah, I think we had. The other thing that they added, too, was the Rebel Spy. The Rebel Spy was not a thing up until they switched it over to
until
the Adventure
I was
continues.
On it.
Yes, you were the Rebel Spy the last time we were on it.
I've never been the Rebel
crazy.
Spy. And then I was the last time. So
that's because we had such an amazing trip. We had so many like extra magical things just randomly happen to us that trip. It was, of course, you were the Rebel Spy. Of all the trips, it made sense it was that trip. But the thing I kind of want to dig deeper in, and if any of you listeners know this, I'm curious why they decided to choose to replace Rex when they switched it up to The Adventure Continues. Because Rex was the pilot or captain on the original Star Tours, and then when it reemerged as Star Tours The Adventure Continues, C-3PO is the one that is now sitting in that front seat there. They talked about the switch in behind the attraction, but they didn't explain why Rex was retiring or why he went away. They said that they still wanted to keep in that same feel. They wanted kind of a nervous, funny person that's the one that's in charge of the vehicle, which they already had that character existed. It's C-3PO. I think he's a wonderful, even though he doesn't mean to be, I think he's a wonderful captain whenever you do board your Star Tours cruiser. But yeah, I thought that was interesting because, again, Rex was an original character. It was something that was designed specifically for the attraction. He did not exist in the Star Wars universe prior to this. So I'm curious why he no longer had that role.
I'm trying to look it up right now and I don't see anything.
Yeah, I am happy that he's a DJ and that he's living his best cantina life in Batuu now. But for quite a while, Rex was just part of the queue. You can see some of the old Rex figures in the queue to Star Tours today. He's over in kind of like the baggage area. So he's still part of the attraction, but doesn't nearly have as big of a role anymore. So, yeah, if anybody knows that little tidbit, I'd be curious. Or if anybody has any other fun, cool things about the history of Star Tours and, you know, the technology that went into it, we'd be happy to hear more because It's just fascinating. Again, it's, you feel like, I know it's not a simple ride, but I feel like in the grand scope of things, there's just so much more to it than I ever thought there would be.
Yeah, I agree. For something that, you know, just on the surface, especially now, years later, and we've had it for 35 years, mm-hmm. you know, we're so used to, oh, it's just a, you know, a simulator or whatever. There's all, you know, there's a bunch of simulator type attractions. And, you know, I didn't think there was that much to it. But then watching the behind the attraction, the Imagineering story and stuff like that. And of course, all the research you've done for this episode, I think I learned a few things even tonight. So hopefully our listeners enjoyed learning a little bit about Star Tours, at least up till today, the last 35 years.
Mm-hmm. Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. And then yous can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, Dia Weekly.
Well, welcome back into Trivia Land, where we're going to find out how Tag and Teresa did tonight. How are you feeling about your answers tonight?
Well, I was feeling pretty good until the end there. And we just went sprinting headfirst into a wall.
Yeah, I'm looking on Google Maps Street View, and when the French fry rocks were still there, you could not see the Mark Twain from Buzz Lightyear's queue because the French fry rocks were in the way. And there's a lot of trees. So maybe not. But anyway, let's get the answers.
Yes,
let's see how wrong we are.
Let's find out the answers. So your first question, submitted by listener Stephen S. How many full-size starships, not counting escape pods, are located within Galaxy's Edge? There is the First Order Transport by First Order Cargo, the Millennium Falcon, the Docking Bay 7 Transport, the X-Wing located by Rise of the Resistance, the A-Wing also by Rise of the Resistance, Poe's X-Wing in Rise of the Resistance, the Transport in the Rise of the Resistance, the TIE Fighter in Rise of the Resistance, and technically in orbit above Galaxy's Edge, making for a grand total of 8.
TIE Fighter in... That's a trick one, too. What a tricky week.
Are you saying
we
the
have.
One that's when you get on the ship and it's...
Yeah, the one that you, like, see flying.
Hmm. Hmm.
I don't know how one. I feel about this, Vern.
I'm going with what was submitted.
Dang. Tricky.
I vet the answers the listeners give us, but
Stephen
once they're vetted, I go with them.
Tricky. Tricky, tricky, tricky. You got us.
He's being technical because full size, because you don't see the full Star Destroyer.
Well, I feel like you don't see the full transport then either. That's why
you
tricky.
Do. You see almost the whole thing. You just can't walk behind it.
I suppose. Tricky. Still very, very tricky.
Tricky.
You got us, Steven. You got us.
Hey, at least we got all the other ones, though, Teresa.
Let's hope, except for the last one. We know that we
no,
fell
I
flat
mean,
on our face.
We got all the
you
other
did keep saying Smuggler's Run, and I was going to call you on technicality for that. But
Smuggler's Run, what?
When you were listing all of them, you kept saying, oh, there's the X-Wing over by Smugglers.
Oh,
there's the A-Wing over by Smugglers. And I'm like,
no,
what
Rise.
Are you talking about?
Yeah, Rise.
Anyway, your second question from listener Chris Y. Where can you find a carving of a boy jousting? Teresa getting it perfectly correct right off the bat, knowing that it is on top of the roof of Pinocchio's Daring Journey.
Whoop, whoop.
Well done there.
Hey, I said whatever Teresa said. Huh? I should get a point for that.
You do get a point.
Yeah, no, you both locked in
yep,
on that
answer.
Yeah,
we both get points.
Points for both.
Okay.
Well laid.
Okay. All right.
Your third regular round question submitted by listener Donna S. What is the deepest river in Disneyland? Coming in at its deepest point with a whopping 10 feet deep, the answer I was looking for was Storybook Land Canal Boats.
What? <Really? laughs> Oh, man. No.
With Rivers of America coming in at its deepest with only 8 feet.
Wow. Why is Storybook so deep?
Wow.
I do not know.
What a crazy, great, we're not even through this yet. What a crazy trivia week this has been. Wow.
This is what happens when we take the holiday.
Everything
we come back.
Is just, wow, dang. I really, really thought that the middle of the Rivers of America would have been deeper than Storybook Land canal boats. That's nuts.
Oh, yeah, there is the guy jousting up on top of the roof.
Isn't he cute?
Would have been cuter if I would have got
Megan,
the question.
Now
right.
I'm afraid. Oh, yeah, no kidding. I'm even more worried about the boat tipping on Storybook Land canal boats than I like. More anxious about that now than I ever was before, knowing it's that deep.
It's probably not that deep at the loading zone, though.
I would
hope
not.
Which is where you're most likely to tip over.
I wonder, like, where do you think it is that deep in all of Storybook? Like, why? Why would it be that? Why would it need to be 10 feet? That's nuts.
I don't know. Your fourth and final listener-submitted regular round question for tonight from listener Whitney N. What are the natural rock formations that inspired the landscape of Big Thunder Mountain Railroad? The answer given by listener Whitney N. is a correct answer, but not the answer you gave.
Nope.
After some vetting, the answer you gave is also a correct answer.
Mm-hmm. Woo!
So, your answer of Ornament Valley or Monument Valley Park, I do give credit for. The answer we were looking for was Bryce Canyon National Park in Utah. So, points to both of you, and thank you, Whitney, for giving another answer.
Whew.
Cool.
Saved by a technicality. There is some hope.
And your bonus question tonight. What queue are you in? There are edible plants. You can see the Mark Twain. You're surrounded by wrought iron railings. And there's a pet cemetery.
Oh, wait a minute. I don't remember being surrounded by wrought iron.
The original words were, there are wrought iron railings. Sorry. But
we had already locked it. It doesn't
matter. Yeah, no, I know.
You are, in fact, in line for the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah. Oh,
and those what edible plants were the carrots and the garlic and whatnot in the pet cemetery.
I mean, tricky. Tricky Steven,
tricky
Donna, tricky Vern. Every other question was a stump or like a trick for us. We just weren't quite there, but that's okay. It was still fun.
You know what's funny? Yeah. I forgot about Storybook Land canal boats, although I would have thought, I wouldn't have thought that they were that deep.
No way. Mm-mm.
Well, yeah, Teg, when you asked what was I counting as a river, I was just listening to like what you were asking counted as a river. I thought he's not thinking of canal boats at all.
Oh, never in my wildest dreams would I have thought Storybook Land canal boats was deeper than the Jungle Cruise River and Rivers of America. There's no way.
I would have never thought there were more than 3-4 feet.
The only other thing I was thinking about was the moat in front of Sleeping Beauty's castle. That looks pretty deep to me, but I don't know if that's technically, like, if it's a river.
Oh.
That was the only other body of water. I was like, well, that could be pretty darn deep, but yeah, I don't know. Great questions. Thank you again. I know we were giving you a hard time, but thank you again to Stephen S., Chris Y., Donna S., and Whitney N. for submitting questions for us to answer this week. They were good ones.
Well, listeners, how do you think they did tonight? How did you do listening at home? Do you think you've got the next tricky question that can really stump them in the future? If you've got what it takes, feel free to send that in to us at trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.